again. To the high end.
Blog Talk Radio.
Police fire the villain player in the 1997 Bond film Tomorrow Never Dies. The current bid of $100,000, just a fraction of the original cost. They sound like a deal, but there's a catch. The sea ship.
Everybody, I hope you all enjoyed that song. That was Miss Susan Boyle and Amazing Grace, one of my favorite songs. In fact, it is my favorite song. And we have our own Mr. Robert Kaplan on the line with us. Of course, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. And if I understand it correctly, I think Robert is going to be doing a live remote broadcast for us from the Faulty Towers Hotel in Cocoa Beach, Florida. Robert, I understand they've gone all nude down there now.
Hold on one second, Ron. I'm going to put you on my cell phone. Hold on.
Sorry, I couldn't resist that. I read that article today.
Hold on.
No worries. Yeah, you go right ahead.
Okay.
And, of course, we've I don't know how that happened, but that's okay. We'll get him switched back over. Maybe without the static tonight. That's what he's shooting for. You know, in reading all of the articles and things going on in the war against God, one of the things that prompted me to play that song, probably the main thing that prompted me to play that song. And it's unfortunate that we have become a society that is just devoted to denying the existence of God. Are you with me now, Mr. Robert?
Yes, sir, I am.
Wow, that is crystal clear. Fantastic.
Thank you, sir.
How are you doing today?
I had an exhausting day, and I took my exam. And I did improve, but I'm ready for it next semester.
Well, that's good.
That's all I could do. At least I got through the exam. But it was all conceptual. There wasn't too many calculations on there. But other than that, I survived it, and I'm still on this earth, which is a good thing. So,
yeah. So you haven't been kicked out yet.
I haven't been kicked out. They won't let me. They won't let me go, Ron. I'm their prisoner of war, so to speak. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was just saying that. Reading all of the stuff that I've looked over in the last few days, just watching how our society has descended into one that rejects God. And it's just sad. That's one of the reasons I played that song. At the outset. And, you know, I think it really goes back to individuals, fathers, mothers, back to the parenting, back to the household, and the fact that we get so distracted by the momentary pleasures in life that we forget to pay homage. And we take our eyes off of the goal. We just get caught up and distracted in all the little things that go on around us. And we forget to focus on the most important thing, and that's our Father, our Creator. But it's unfortunate that the result of that is a decline of society, and we're watching it right now. And I know Linda and myself and others, we've talked about, you know, the similarities between what's going on in the United States right now and Hitler's rise to power, and not particularly talking about Obama per se, but just the mood, the mindset, the things that are going on. And I kind of feel like perhaps it's a little bit more like the mood would have been in Germany after World War I. And, you know, really we've brought a lot of that on ourselves by what we've allowed our government to do throughout the decades without our protests. We've just gone along with it. And it's unfortunate. And, you know, Linda sent me a great article today, which the guy was, or a video actually, from an accountant who was explaining why we're in trouble economically and the fact that it's impossible at this point for the government to balance the budget, even if they shut down the government entirely. And that's simply because the amount of outlay from entitlement programs and the interest on our debt consumes more than the government takes in taxes. So if you add into that all of our far-flung adventures in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria and Pakistan and around the world, it becomes very self-evident why we're in the trouble we're in. And they act as if, you know, this is no problem at all, that, you know, our government can send money through USAID. We've spent over $100 billion in Afghanistan trying to rebuild Afghanistan. And, you know, as Obama pointed out yesterday, or today I guess it was, that our infrastructure here in the United States has fallen to pieces. And it truly is. I mean, you drive any of the interstates, you look at the bridges and the roads and the condition they're in, and this is not something new. We've known about this for decades. We've just simply done nothing about it. All that money that was coming to the government through the motor fuels tax that was supposed to be directed at taking care of and maintaining our infrastructure has been used for other things. And, you know, it's just, it's ridiculous. We're not getting what we're paying for. The American people, we're just not getting what we're paying for.
Ron?
Yes?
It's the truth. Not only we're not getting paid what we're paying for, we're losing money all the way around. I mean,
well that's true. I mean, the government borrows every dollar that it spends.
Well, why can't we audit the government? Really?
Well, you know, there comes a time, and I think America is slowly but surely waking up to the fact that, you know, the government has gone awry, and that's our job. It is our obligation to keep our government, whether it be federal, state, or local, in check. And we have failed in that. In that category, in that obligation. And in the meantime, we have allowed, authorized, consented to the wholesale loss of liberty, of individual private property rights, of individuals' right to privacy, and many other rights, out of some sense of fear and perhaps some sense of duty to catch the boogeyman. You know, I saw a great cartoon, and it would have been funny if it weren't so damned true, and it was a family sitting down at a dinner table inside of a prison cell, and they were discussing, gee, I feel safe now, don't you?
Oh, Matt. Wow. What a concept.
But that's the reality of the situation.
It is. You're right. That's how I, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm beginning to feel that I'm a prisoner of war in my own home trying to figure out my budget. It's ridiculous, really. Actually, it's pretty comical to watch Wells Fargo in action. I mean,
I knew that Wells Fargo deal was not going to be good for anybody except Wells Fargo.
They're stealing my money, Ron. somehow, some way, they are stealing my money. How, I don't know. But my balance is never correct. It's never correct, Ron. Ever. Like this morning, I saw not 8250, right? Pending transactions. So I only had two pending transactions left in my checking account, right? It was from a yard man, not $8. When I look back at it at 4 o'clock, I didn't buy anything today, Ron. It went up from 9250 for pending transactions to the 122.50. So well, where's another $30?
I don't know. You know, they probably have the IRS running their account books for them.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I just don't get it. I'm giving up trying to even look at my checking account. But you know, I have to keep tabs on it now. It's like playing my checking account. It's like playing the slot machines.
Well, you know, I mean, anymore, you just about, Robert, have to hire a CPA to run your personal affairs, to watch over your money, and put you on an allowance so that you don't get screwed up in your budget. I'm serious. People may think I'm joking about that, but I'm dead serious.
And you know, you're absolutely 100% correct.
It's as if you need a professional for each little compartmentalized category in your life. You know, you need a professional accountant to hover over your finances and watch them 24/7. You need a lawyer to walk around with you and make sure that you don't say anything that's unacceptable or hate speech or, you know, anything that could get you in trouble, and probably ride with you in your car in case you're stopped by a cop. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, my Lord. What else do we have to look forward to these days anymore? I haven't watched the news probably, Ron. I'm basically just saying what I feel from my heart now, not from my brain. I mean,
why?
I don't watch the news
very, very rarely. I watched a little bit today out of nothing but sheer boredom. But you can rest assured that as we progress forward, as our president has his new slogan, forward, as we move forward in this Marxist ideology, and as our government descends deeper into debt, they're going to be scratching, clawing, and fighting to steal every penny from everyone they can possibly get it from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there will be nothing sacred. There
no.
is nothing sacred now.
No. No. I mean,
and, you know, I see they're really whipping up this story now about the blind dissident in China, and he's hanging out or hiding out at the U.S. Embassy in China after narrowly escaping house arrest with the help of some friends, and he's seeking political asylum in the U.S. And of course, we're going to use that against China as a little bit of leverage. And I suspect the reasoning that we want to put pressure on them to let us continue our operations or ramp up operations in Syria.
I have a question for you, Ron.
Sure.
I mean, how can the United States go after China when we are building a foundation of socialism and they're building a foundation of capitalism. Answer that one for me, please, sir. So I don't know.
Well, I think it's part of a game, quite honestly. And if you look at the United Nations and the UN papers and some of their publications, China is actually the model that they want for the world. China is the model, and it's a quasi-capitalist system, much like what we have here, but their regime is a little more controlling than ours, which may be hard to believe, but, you know, they'll just, they don't have, in China, they don't have any qualms about taking you out back and just shooting you in the head.
But is that the model that Herman Cain was referring to, the 999 quote plan?
I think he thought he was German for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you know who was the one that said that? Was that Bush's son that said fuzzy math, or Al Gore? I can't remember.
Oh God, I think it was Gore that came up with fuzzy math.
You know, I can't remember. It's got to the point where, you know, all the puzzles that we've been putting together, and we finally, you know, did point A to point B to point C to point D, and we've figured out the regression of this whole stuff. And now that we've figured it out, what's left? I mean...
Right. Well, the idiot talking points do kind of just all kind of run together at some point, you know? You don't remember who said what because none of it was terribly memorable. And it was all the same old rhetoric crap. Didn't matter which side of the camp it was coming from.
I mean, you know, I don't know what to think anymore. What you said is true. Yeah, you're going to have your own accountant, your own lawyer, to represent you in order to keep your house afloat, to keep your house together. Really? You know? I gotta start learning how to fish and hunt and go up to Indiana and live off the wild, I guess.
Yep. And you know, my pops is on here. He said he's talking about his doctor's nurse telling him, you don't understand. The insurance company saying, you don't understand. The government saying, you don't understand.
Right,
and
right.
He's right, you know. And he, I mean, he's frustrated. I understand. You know, he's dealing with, as a government-run system, being in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and it has to be extremely frustrating to be dictated to as a grown-ass man, having all these other people dictate to you how you're going to live your life. You're going to do X, Y, and Z. We're not going to give you this prescription. We're going to give you this prescription. And you can see through the bullshit and you understand that the only thing they're doing is trying to minimize costs.
Right.
It has not a damn thing to do with taking care of the patient.
Right. They're just putting a Band-Aid on it. That's all they're doing. They're not even putting a Band-Aid on it, actually. They're just putting alcohol and peroxide over it without the Band-Aid and let the wound try to heal by itself, and that's not going to even help either.
And, you know, I mean, you're living down in Florida. I've got mail. I was surprised when I was down there that, you know, my wife and I went to breakfast a couple of times and there was no creamer on the table. And the waitress told me, oh, you need creamer, we'll get you some. They don't keep it on the table because the senior citizens load up their purses and take it home.
That's right.
Along with sugar and everything else. What does that say? What the hell does that say about the grandeur of our Social Security system?
I'll try to answer that question for you. The granddaughter of the Social Security system is people abusing the Social Security system. They're just abusing it.
Well, it's not even a matter of abuse. It's a matter of socialism just doesn't effing work.
No, it doesn't. But my point, I mean, I said this tons of times before on the show, is that what I call these really rich folks, and I call, I hope I don't fit anybody on the show, but I mean, you know, I'm not condemning anybody for being a billionaire or anything like that.
Well, I don't think we have any of those on the show, but so I think you're safe.
But I'm trying to hold water. Where, you know, I try to be as delicate as I can. But these, well, I call when I was doing home health, going to, you know, patient to patient, taking care of these people. They would get their jollies off of how to abuse Medicare and Medicaid.
Well, sure,
you know?
Gaming the system. Look, I'm not surprised. My daughter and I were talking this morning. She was talking about this show they have that's based here in Atlanta, with the Atlanta cops, and it's called Bait Car,
mm-hmm.
where they set up these cars and these miscreants, you know, in droves, run up and they steal these cars, and then of course they're busted. You know, they've got the cars rigged, all the doors will lock and the engine will shut off, and they're in there trying to kick the windows out, and then they, when they're caught, they're lying. They said, well, we were just going to drop it off at the police station.
Oh,
as
Jesus.
If that's believable. And I told her, I said, but you see, that's a consequence of raising generations of people who have no respect people's property, and the reason they have no respect for it is because everything they've ever had has been given to them.
Exactly.
They've never had to earn a damn thing in their lives.
You know, Ron, I don't know what else to think anymore, man. You know, I've been talking to you guys for so long, and what we've been have been saying on the show is like we know the gig, we know it's what. You know, and to quote Mitt Romney, you know, we're not stupid.
Well, evidently we are, because he's the damn nominee, you know. That's another thing that kills me. I get mail from redstate.com, which is Eric Erickson, who's a local radio host down here in Atlanta. And it's a love-hate relationship, because he has moments of brilliance, and then he sticks his foot in his mouth and shows that he's a complete moron. And, you know, these people, some of the comments on his latest column, a guy was talking about, you know, if we want to balance the budget, shrink the government, lower taxes, save the republic, oh, we need to pick up the flag and vote for Mitt Romney. And I thought, you're an idiot. Just an absolute idiot. I have not heard Romney express one coherent thought as to restoring our republic and getting our government spending under control.
No.
All he's
either.
Talked about is continuing the status quo. And they sit there and they argue over tax rates and who should be paying what percentage. Or maybe we should do a 999. And none of that has a damn thing to do with solving the problem. It's just monkeying around with the appearances. Okay? They want to change the perception. They want to give you an alternate reality so that you perceive things differently. But the fact of the matter is, we're still on the damn Titanic, and it's still sinking.
So how many millionaires would it take to balance? Let's say if every millionaire had $1 million to give, like the comedian Barr, they'd like just like chunk, you know, it's just like throwing chunk change away, right?
Right.
How much million to $1 million? How many people would it take to balance the budget?
Well,
How many millions?
Look, there's a great video on YouTube called Eat the Rich. Okay? And they break it down. And I'll give you the shortened version. You can confiscate 100% from every man, woman, and child in the United States of America. Everyone. Every ball player, every millionaire, every billionaire. Sell their property, their homes, everything. You can take it all. Everything. It'll be completely owned by the state. That'll pay to run the government for 1 year. And you'll actually come up a couple of days short.
Wow. Well, maybe that's what we should do. What the hell? What do we have to lose? You know, when my attorney general for the state of Florida supported Romney, I knew it was all over with. I really liked her a lot. I really thought she was, you know, I really, really liked her. I really liked her a lot. But when she put her support to bed, I don't know.
See, a lot of these people just, look, it's the old adage, go along to get along. These people want to advance their careers, so they do anything for the party, even if they can't stand the SOB that's running. It's the same thing that went on with John McCain. The guy's not qualified to be president. He's an idiot. And we've got Miss Linda Sills on the phone from California. How are you, Miss Linda?
Oh, fine, sir. Thank you. And hi, Robert. You'll learn how to fish and hunt and learn how to shop and cook for yourself, because I got to teach you some stuff. Man. That particular video that I sent to Ron, and I can't remember if I sent it to others. I hope I still have it. But that was about the situation with the deficits and the debt and the spending and the taxation. And you're not going to tax your way out of it, and you're certainly not going to spend your way out of it. If they shut government down completely, which I don't advocate, because we would be instant Greece and there would be hell to pay. I mean, talk about catastrophe. It would be a mess. But I don't know if you guys have researched, and I haven't done the whole research of it, but the Mac Penny plan sounded like a really good start, but nobody pays any even lip service to it anymore. I know there were a few people like DeMint and Paul Ryan who were on board with that, and it made a lot of sense. You know, for every dollar that government spends, they have to cut one penny, and it should go on for as many years as possible to get under control. And it sounded like a viable solution.
I think that a 1% reduction in spending across the board is it sounds, and I'm not going to criticize too heavily because I haven't read it, but I mean, in essence, that's what you're talking about, is cutting government spending by 1%.
Right.
What Ron Paul has proposed is more than doable, and that is to cut $1 trillion in spending the first year, and
right.
to cut government spending by 10% across
that works
the board.
Too. Yeah.
Across the board, 10% every year.
Mm-hmm.
And in 3 years, you balance the budget.
Wow, that's even better than Max plan. But these poor guys,
not,
you know, they were grasping at straws back when this was put together, and I think that was 2010.
One of the litmus tests that I put on these budget plans that these guys put out,
right,
is when do you balance the budget? And you hear the Ryan plan and this plan and that plan.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, we'll balance
sure.
the budget in 2025. Horse manure.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. It's a pipe dream.
You'll no longer be in office, sir. So after 4 years, it's all nothing but pipe dream. Let's
sure.
focus
and,
on it. And I think that's why Ron Paul said we'll do it in 3 years. It's within his first term as president.
Sure.
You balance the damn budget. Now that you've got a balanced budget, And, you know, you don't need an amendment to the Constitution. I think
right.
that's dangerous when we do those kind of things.
Sure.
What we need to do is just simply be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's absolutely correct in introducing competing currency in the United States. Let the market decide which currency they want, which one they favor. You know, that's how the founders determined the measure of our currency, which is called a dollar. They let
right.
the market decide. They went out into the market
mm-hmm.
and they looked around and said, what is the most widely accepted form of currency in the colonies? Lo and behold, it was 1 ounce silver coin.
Right.
And not a British pound. Not
right.
not this other. It was a specific coin that had a closely regulated fineness and weight. And that's
right.
what
and
people went to because it was consistent and they could count on it.
So that's what people traded with. And that's what they were happy with.
Right. So we set our standard as the dollar. The dollar standard, which comes from the taler, T-H-A-L-L-E-R, which was that coin.
Ah.
Which, you know, also we Spanish pieces of eight. Edwin Vieira has got a great work called Pieces
mm-hmm.
of Eight. It's a two-volume book. It's gigantic. It's
oh,
like
wow.
It's like two Strong's concordance.
Wow.
I mean, it's that big. But it makes
Amazing.
The case for
sure.
a constant money. And if
yeah.
if there's one thing in our system that has been constantly changing, it's our money, our monetary standard.
Yeah, and we have the Federal Reserve to thank for a lot of this mess, too. Including our own Congress, as you know, going along with this nonsense. And as
Absolutely.
Far as I'm concerned, Bernanke is a schmuck, and he should probably be in jail alongside Hillary and Holder. That's just me.
Well, and I hope that people understand, and I know, Linda, you have done a lot more study into the economic side of things. And, you know, this is why I've been screaming bloody murder since day one. It's
mm-hmm.
the monetary system. If you
right.
take away the monetary system from your Congress, the way it sits right now,
right.
take it away from the Federal Reserve system,
mm-hmm.
they lose control of you.
And that's the whole point. And this is what we're fighting, Ron. You and everybody here on Patriot Families understands that these, since we've done our homework on the founding, et cetera, we've read everything we can get our hands on, that these rights come from God. And they are illegally stealing them from us, and we've been allowing it, and we've got to start screaming. Now, on the monetary side of it, I'm still learning because I'm trying to understand it, but if you take it down to stick figure cartoons, basic understanding word, you know, for me, makes it easier. Capital is actually production. And if you have a person who's like hanging out in Bill's neighborhood because they all hunt and fish, and you go to a tree and you make yourself a little spear, that's your capital, because that's going to produce a fish for you when you aim it properly. You have,
yep.
you know, that's and this is what Hayek talks about, and this is what John Locke and Milton Friedman talk about, and people just don't get it. And of course they've been, you know, indoctrinated into this Marxist Keynesian theories for so long. How do you explain it to people?
Well, and that's why I sent you that that article from the
right.
Von Mises Institute. It was interesting to note in that article, I thought, that here's this guy, he gets to speak before the Federal Reserve, a
sure.
group of economists. And they were stunned because he's giving them ideas that they've never been exposed to.
Right.
Like the idea that supply and demand in a supply and demand economy, demand is not what drives the economy necessarily. It's not that cut and dried. And he gave the example of iPads and iPhones and flat
mm-hmm.
screen televisions. None of those things existed. And so there could not have been a demand for them. But when they were created, the supply created the demand.
Exactly. This is the same with everything we've ever had, including telephones and refrigerators.
Yes.
And, you know, anything you want to name.
Precisely.
Ironing board, you know, anything
any,
that people...
Any kind of innovation.
Right. It comes from entrepreneurship. That comes from the mind of an individual, and it is up to the individual, and that is your production. That's your capital. That's how you create wealth, through entrepreneurship. And if we're
left
alone...
And that's only one of...
Yeah.
Right. And that's only one of the fundamental principles that Keynesians have 100% incorrect. They believe that demand drives supply.
Oh, Lord.
You know, once demand is established, then yes. But there first has to be that supply to create
the
initial
chicken and
the
egg.
Demand.
Right. Yeah, it's the old chicken and
right.
egg thing.
And so they're all caught up in controlling the money supply, and that's all they see. And by controlling the money supply, they can manipulate demand, and they think that they're doing some grandiose thing. And in fact, they have utterly failed at every one of the mandates for the Federal Reserve System. They've been an utter failure. Price stability, you know, unemployment or full employment, a stable money supply. The whole idea behind the paper money was to have a currency that was elastic. It could expand and contract with supply and demand. That was the whole ideology. The problem is you get human nature involved, and it's no longer restricted to supply and demand, because there is another factor in there, like we saw with the Fed, you know, sending $16.8 trillion overseas, all the money that we've sent over to Europe via the IMF for the bailouts in Greece and other places.
Crazy.
Funding covert projects. You know, you got $2.3 trillion that disappears from the Pentagon just prior to 9/11.
Yeah.
That was on the hot plate. And then, you know, 9/11 happened and everybody forgot about that $2.3 trillion.
Good grief.
So, you know, they're trying to make hard and fast rules, you know, laws like the law of gravity. They're trying to make that same premise in economics, and it doesn't work that way.
No.
Because economics, an economy, is built up of individual people.
Right.
And we don't always act rationally.
Right.
And you know, we don't always respond the correct way given a certain stimulus. So you can't accurately map all the time. You just can't do it. And that's why that's one of many reasons that they fail.
And that was a great explanation when he said you can't apply that economic theory to theories like gravity or science that has been, you know, never disproven.
You can't apply it as a law. It's not a law.
Right.
There are no laws in economics. I would say there's one law in economics. Okay, and the one law in economics is you'll never get it right 100% of the time.
Yeah, the other law is, and the Fed. That's my new one.
Well, it should be. And I, you know, the whole thing is interference with free market. And I don't even think that they grasp the fact that because they are a central bank, they are interfering not only in commerce here within our borders, but worldwide. They're impacting and affecting commerce. And their impact is largely negative.
Yeah. Well, when you've got these people who are bent on controlling the populace, which is what I believe a lot of this is about. I mean, you can go back to Rothschild's statement 300 years ago. He doesn't care who's making the laws as long as he controls the money and the money supply and the currency of a nation. It's all about control. And these greedy SOBs that are in power now, they're not just messing with monetary system. Ron, they're taking every damn freedom away we've ever dreamed of. God could have given us. I mean, the Agenda 21, it's every single time they put new regulations, this is, you know, this is nudge, shove, and shoot. I'm telling you. And it's horrendous. I'm tired of it. I don't know what we're going to do. We ain't voting our way out. I imagine we have to shoot our way out.
Well, it's like a control grid, you know, a structure, a net that is placed over the population with all these interconnected agencies to control every aspect of your life. That's one of the things that Ron Paul talked about in the 08 campaign that I haven't heard him say a lot of this time around, but that is, if you want government to take care of you from cradle to grave, then you have to have all of these programs and all of these agencies. If you want to be a free and independent individual and be responsible for yourself, then you can't stomach any of these agencies being in existence.
I agree, and I think that we should have a new, let's see, on unemployment, bring it down to the 46 weeks, and everybody that doesn't belong, like the EPA and the rest of them, and the list goes on forever, let's see how they do on 46 weeks and get rid of them. That would save a lot of money and a lot of headache.
See, I'm not that benevolent, okay? I've been working my whole life. You know, my pops is on here, and he can attest to this. When I decided that I didn't want to go to school anymore, he told me that was fine. I could quit school that very day. It wasn't a big deal. However, if I intended to live in his house, then I was going to have to depart from his site and not return until I had a job. And by a job, he meant full-time, 40 hours a week, paying job. And I rode off on my 10-speed bike, and I was gone about 35 minutes, and I came back, and he said, I thought I told you not to come back until you had a job. And I said, I got one. I start tonight. And I was working at a nursing home.
Wow.
Working 11 to 7 at the nursing home, and that's when I bought my first car.
Awesome.
I've never been out of work for more than a day or two unless I chose to be out of work.
Right.
So for me, if we're going to have unemployment at all, which I think it's just another socialist program.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a way for government to steal money. I mean, I've looked at the comprehensive annual financial report from the state of Georgia, and I know how much money they've got socked away in unemployment alone, which is ridiculous. But I would say that for me, 2 months, you get 2 months worth of unemployment, and that's it. If you haven't found a job in 2 months, you're SOL.
Yeah, what's going on, when you talk about this net and it keeps tightening, when you look at the unemployment rate in this country, and let's go with the real figures, it's probably 17% nationally, and I know California is over 21%. And I'm not saying that anybody should be encouraged with 99 weeks of unemployment to sit home and not try to get a job. I'm not saying that at all, but look at the.
I will.
look at what's happening. I mean, like I said, it's not a good thing because it is a socialist program, but there are no jobs, so you can't just fix the problem by cutting off the unemployment benefits. If that makes sense, you have got to get these government agencies erased, eradicated, and out of our way, so that people would be able to work. I mean, we've gone through this before, but during the Coolidge time, because the unemployment rate was less than 2%, the whole country was working. If you had a poll, you could get a job. This is what we need to have here. They didn't call it the Roaring Twenties just for their health. Everybody was happy.
But you have to look at some of the underlying factors of why everybody was happy. You've got to look at the time frame that we were coming out of as a country, okay?
Right.
And this is why in that article he was chastising the economists there at the Fed when they were bringing up the Great Depression and how the Fed saved us from the Great Depression and how things were. We had many depressions before the Fed came along, and he did not delve into it with him. But if you go back and look at the Great Panic, okay, in 1907, mm-hmm. that prompted okay. people to usher in the era of the Federal Reserve Bank. That panic was a manipulation in the market. And it was done by a couple of big bankers. The primary one was J.P. Morgan. And J.P. Morgan and Warburg and a few others got together. They were naturally competitors, but they figured out that if they worked together, they could manipulate the market to start a new bank, a central bank. And this was an idea that came from Warburg. And so they create this Federal Reserve System. And, of course, you have to have the problem in order to offer the solution.
Right.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that they all loved this idea is because they didn't like competition. They thought
Correct.
That was not good.
So
yeah.
let's look at the facts. So you have this panic in 1907, right? And
mm-hmm.
so the people recognize there's a problem. And who comes to the rescue but J.P. Morgan and loans
Lovely.
The government gold? Now people are worried. They start pointing fingers and whispering, saying, you know, we've got to break up the money trust because these people have more money than the government. And so they run off to Jekyll Island and conjure up this Federal Reserve
mm-hmm.
Act. And, of course, I won't go into the whole story, but we know that the
right.
Federal Reserve Act finally gets passed. This is a problem, reaction, solution scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Once they had the Federal Reserve, the money flowed like wine. We're coming
wow.
out of, you know, you first changed the tax structure, okay, so that you eliminate the consumption
mm-hmm.
tax that was in place prior to
okay.
the Federal Reserve. And you put in place an income tax, but you're only going to tax the wealthiest Americans. See, this is where this tax the rich crap falls flat on its face.
Mm-hmm.
So we're only going to tax the wealthy, and even that's just going to be 1 or 2%, not onerous at all. So the money is flowing like wine, and you
mm-hmm.
can expand. You can now, you've got this fractional reserve lending system that you can just
yeah.
extrapolate money. It's flying. Everybody is playing the stock market. It's like Vegas
right.
on Wall Street, and you've got the roaring 20s. That is the boom.
Right.
That's the boom cycle that comes from the creation of the Fed, the end of World War One. They were trying like hell at the same time, mind you, to create the League of Nations and get their
yes.
plan in place.
Right.
And what happened was, you know, they said, okay, you know, we've gone on long enough. We're going to start calling in the loans. They were contracting the money supply. And so all that prosperity that came from all that free money
mm-hmm.
suddenly dried up. And it dried up because the bank contracted the money supply. And they continued to contract the money supply. And then who
right.
comes in, who steps in as the savior? Government.
Oh, God.
Right? With all these social programs.
Mm-hmm.
This is what brought you Social Security, unemployment,
yep.
all these make-work projects, right? Now, all of this came out of
FDR.
The Depression. The people would never have gone for such socialist programs had they not been put into such a dire...
Straight, yeah.
Dire system. So,
so
I mean, you can trace that all back to the Federal Reserve.
Oh,
if you
yeah.
want to go, if you want to look at the boom and bust cycles that occurred prior to the Federal Reserve, you can look
mm-hmm.
at government manipulation through the first Bank of the United States, the second
yep.
Bank of the United States,
yep.
and
Absolutely.
How they ran up bond prices and then crashed them and ran up bond prices and crashed them. And that brought about the carpetbaggers and all these different things. We had
mm-hmm.
the same situation happen during the Civil War when we inflated our money supply through the greenbacks. And most people don't even know that there was a crisis
mm-hmm.
in the 1870s, okay? And that prompted the writing of Alice in Wonderland. And then you had the rise of of the Silver Movement,
right,
and Williams Jennings Bryan. Okay, all that came out of money manipulation. That
so the
was before the Fed existed. So we've been practicing this since the ink was barely dry on the Constitution.
I know. So the conclusion one must come to is that every time the government gets their damn little hands into anything, they screw it up worse than a wet dream. I mean, it's just unbelievable what they do. It just makes me crazy. Oh, leave us alone.
And what is the definition of fascism?
Well, it's do as I tell you to do, not as I do. One.
Well,
it's
right.
Total control.
The marriage of corporation and government.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's what Hitler did too under socialism.
Well,
he did the same.
What the hell was the first and the second Bank of the United States and the Federal Reserve if it's not fascist?
It is. They got to have their little mitts into everything, and it's crazy. So from 1921, when the unemployment dropped to 1.8% at the time, and we had the Roaring Twenties, and the middle class grew exponentially, and people were happy, and the actual salaries of those people who were working went up, you know, had increased by 37% over that time period. Was that not due to a free market at that time? I know that they were manipulating things, but there's got to be an explanation as to why that 8 years or whatever happened.
Well, we have to look at, you know, one of the things that the gentleman pointed out in the article, and one of the things that we can see in economics, and again, it's not a law of economics because there isn't really a steadfast rule, and sometimes things happen that we scratch our head and say, wow, that doesn't make any sense. It flies in the face of all logic.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily, if you look through the Industrial Revolution up till today, you take an example of a VCR or a DVD player or a personal computer. When they first were introduced, they were ungodly expensive.
Right.
But as time went on, the price did what? It went down. Now, did the price go down because demand went down? No. The price went down because manufacturing became more efficient. Technology allowed more efficient manufacturing, and they had a greater demand.
Right.
And there's always going to be that supply-demand curve.
Right.
Where those two meet, that's your proper market price point. So when we see a period of prosperity,
mm-hmm,
and we see salaries increasing sharply, we've got to stand back and say, wait a minute. Why are salaries going up? Well, one of the consequences of salaries going up is to keep up with increasing prices on consumer goods. Why are consumer good prices going up? We have better manufacturing, more efficiency. We're getting more yield out of our crops. Why is the price climbing? By most of what I understand in economics, that price should actually be declining until it meets a point where it levels out with demand.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen. Well, it's one of the consequences of using an inflationary monetary system.
There you go.
Where the money that you're creating is debt. So what you're doing is you're artificially inflating the supply of money. And by artificially inflating the supply of money, you're creating artificial demand. This is where you'll hear Ron Paul talk about malinvestment.
Yep.
Malinvestment is when you've got so much money, you're willing to take risks that you otherwise wouldn't take.
Right.
Because, the hell, it's only money. You got lots of it.
Exactly. And that's probably what prompted that stock market crash, because, like you said, the people were gambling.
What prompted the stock market crash is people were trading on margins. And Wall Street, I mean, it's been around forever. They started making margin calls on people's loans. Well, these people were leveraged to the hilt. They only had 10% of money that they were actually betting in the market. So suddenly, you know, when your broker calls your margin, you've got two choices. You can go to the bank and take out a loan, and the bank won't loan you any more money, so the only option is to sell all your stocks to settle your account.
Sure.
Well, if that happens to one or two people, that's no big deal. When they do margin calls on 80% of the people in the market, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
Because what happens
wow.
if 80% of the people are trying to sell? They ain't nobody buying.
That's true. No buying.
Prices crash. You're left holding the bag. You know, you got a stock that was worth $100 a share. And at the end of the day, it's worth $1 a share. Even if you
yep.
cash out all your shares, you can't cover your margin. You're SOL.
Right. So that
and actually, on the way down, you've lost your account. You know, they've margined you out. And
sure.
because they're not going to lose any money. You are.
Exactly.
They won't. That's just
yeah,
the way the game is played.
And you're right. And I do believe that Dr. Paul is correct. It's got to be an honest system, and it's got to make sense, and it's got to get away from this Keynesian nonsense and all the rest of it. Because look what it's gotten us into. I mean,
sure.
We are so close to being Greece, like that video that I saw and sent to you. You know, they've put themselves into a deep, dark box.
Hell, Greece is in better shape than we are.
Yeah, because we're paying for it. we're giving them money.
I mean, seriously, Greece is in better shape than we are. And they're in dire straits.
They are.
Now it's in Spain. I mean, they've got 25% unemployment and growing.
Oh, my Lord.
What do you think? And, you know, I know Joe had called in before. What do you think the impact of that is going to be on our economy when we rely on the European Union purchasing 17% of all the goods we
yep.
manufacture in this country?
It's going to blow up. It's going to melt down.
And what nobody's talking about is the fact that several of the oil producers are getting out of the refining business here in
oh
the United
God.
States.
Oh, my God.
Oh, they're all singing and dancing today. Gas prices are going down. The world is great and everything's fine. You're talking about 30 to 40% of our refining capabilities.
I know.
Disappearing, evaporating.
I heard
today that Delta Airlines is actually looking at buying one of the refineries up in Pennsylvania. But not
wow.
to sell gasoline to the public. It's so that they can make their own jet fuel.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I think it's 40 to 45% of our electricity comes from coal-fired plants, and they're shutting them down. There's moratoriums on drilling because of several administrations, but this one, of course, more so. The EPA has gone way overboard. Look what they're doing to individuals. Look what they're doing to families, farms, everything. It's evil. I mean,
oh, there's no stone left unturned. And it doesn't matter. The law does not matter because agencies, these bureaucracies, are a law unto themselves.
It's the Cass Sunstein rule, I'm telling you. That's where they're getting this stuff from.
I have a friend that works for the power companies here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he works for several, you know, he does work for several. He does planning for the nuclear power plants. Real smart guy, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my customers and a friend. And he was telling me that they actually have a technology
mm-hmm.
that they want to use at these coal-fired power plants that is cleaner than natural gas.
Wow.
And the government will not allow them to do it.
I'm so tired of these people. Why can't we just eradicate them?
You know, most of these power plants still use steam power or,
mm-hmm.
you know, to generate, to turn the turbines, the generators.
Right.
So what they've discovered in these coal-fired plants is that they can take the coal,
mm-hmm.
grind it into a powder, okay, and put it into a liquid, water. And heat it. They heat it up. They're already using steam power to run the generators. So when that hot water comes out of the condensating
mm-hmm.
units, it's still very hot, not hot enough to produce steam on its own.
Right.
but it's still very hot. So they use that to heat the water that this coal mixture is in. And as it heats up, the hydrocarbons, which is what the stuff that actually burns, separates from the coal and becomes a gas that's captured inside the vessel. And they use that gas to run the boilers to boil the steam. And it's a closed system.
Wow.
So you're not getting any junk at the end. And then what comes out, the coal, once it's exhausted from all the hydrocarbons, it's totally carbon neutral at that point.
Wow. So
And they can separate out the sulfur and the other heavy metals and everything before they discharge the powder that's left over that's completely lacking all those nasty materials.
Yeah, you know, the illogic of people's reasoning when they talk about this crappy green energy, and then you've got these stupid Chevy Volts if they don't catch on fire, and then, you know, everybody wants these hybrid or electric cars, and I'm just wondering, since all this huge amounts of coal-fired plants are being shut down, and all this amounts of percentage of our electricity comes from these areas, what are they going to do for these cars? Plug it into the magic electrical wall fairy?
Well, they're going to have to. Either that or they're going to have to build themselves a Tesla generator and capture it out of the air. Okay.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I don't even know what to say to these people except, well, the global warming hoax, you know. And they keep touting it. They're on steroids again, and they're indoctrinating everybody. And I know that Obama keeps talking about his wind and solar. Oh, we can tower so much, just the hot air that comes out of him.
Look, the government and elected officials have proven time and again that the truth is no obstacle for them. It poses no obstacle.
It doesn't live in their world.
Yes, Mr. Robert.
But you know what Linda was talking about, the farms. You know, that really upset me when the government is coming in and enforcing child labor laws on the farms and telling them they can't work on the farms anymore. I mean, they're basically telling people not to work anymore. Did you get that impression, Linda?
Look, Robert, it's called the Kulakization of our farms. Read about what Stalin did in the Ukraine and how he took over the farms and made collective farming. This is what it is. He stole the kulaks, that he called them. They were the people who, like our people here in America, they have their farms and family farms. Just read a little bit of history on this, and you'll see where this is going. This is not a good agenda. It's not good.
I was raised on the farm on the weekends, you know, growing up. I mean,
they're trying to. They do not like the idea of private property. They hate it. These people that are doing this, they do not want us to have anything. I mean, if they had their druthers, they'd put us in gulags tomorrow. I'm telling you, that's their end game anyway.
I mean, when I heard that, Linda, Ron, I mean, my heart broke. It just really just broke.
I grew up in a farm community. I grew up on a farm in Illinois, and you know, when it was harvest time or when it was planting time, you know, you got excused from school to go help in the farm.
Cool.
Exactly.
Now they want to regulate that. Of course, they've backed off of that. But it's no different than what Michigan is doing with the damn pigs up there. It's ridiculous. It's one thing after another.
Another. I know.
And if I had my opinion on the Michigan thing, I would be willing to bet that there is a group of Muslims that's behind that. Now,
yep.
I did hear the guy today talking that he's actually suing. Him and one other farmer are suing Michigan, the state of Michigan. And he has evidence that the people that are pushing this agenda
is the
big pork producers.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you know, it's amazing what's going on. It's time for a revolution, Ron.
they want to put the little guys out of business.
Yep. Well, they again, there's. I think that, you know, when you look at the big picture, I do believe that, with the Agenda 21 and all, and even the other smaller factions or the corporate fascists and the rest of it, and they're all colluded together, they do not like private property, and they sure as hell don't like individual God-given rights. That's what I see today. Every morning I wake up with this. I'm seeing more stuff coming down the pike. How do you fight this?
You know, grief. And you know, we were just talking about prices, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I can give you an example. Now, this is one that, and I've said this on the program before. My grandfather farmed in Illinois, central Illinois, and he farmed corn and soybeans. And he'd farmed corn his entire life. And he showed me receipts from the 1920s where he would get $1.40 a bushel for corn. Now, this was in the 1980s, and he was getting about $1.45 a bushel for corn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so from the 20s to the 80s, he's getting $1.40 a bushel.
Wow.
I just saw today on the news, corn is $7.52 a bushel.
Good God.
But, you know, most of the family farms are gone. They're corporate farms now.
I know. Not good.
Now, all this time, we've had government subsidies on corn.
Mm-hmm.
There's government subsidies on soybeans. The reason they had those subsidies was to keep the price artificially low. We still have subsidies, but now we're going to use corn for fuel.
God,
okay, so we're going to burn our food. Isn't that brilliant?
Oh, that's so stupid.
Yeah, and now suddenly, now that we have all these corporate farms, you know, grain is through the roof.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine. I'm going to do some calculation here because I remember roughly what he was getting per acre.
Mm-hmm.
145 bushels an acre times 360 acres. That's 53,360 bushels, 53,360 times 7.5 equals, that's $400,000. My grandfather never made that kind of money.
Oh, my God.
Hell, Ron, you could have taken my exam.
They let you use a calculator?
Absolutely.
Oh, God.
But I mean, you know, he didn't make a bad living. I mean, he wasn't poor by any stretch. You know, we used to have there was a running joke. You know, the difference between a farmer and a 747, and that is that a 747 stops whining when it lands in Florida.
Oh, God. You're so funny, man.
It was all the poor farmers, but, you know, those poor farmers drove brand-new pickup trucks and had $100,000 combines. But you know what? They worked for their money, by God. And
right.
They resented. During the 80s, the late 70s and early 80s,
mm-hmm.
was a time when the government was really coming down on the farmers pretty hard. And
wow.
They have what were called set-aside acres. That's what my pops put in there. The government paid your grandpa not to grow corn. That is correct. And it pissed him off to no end.
Oh, yeah.
Because they basically told you as a farmer, look, you can only grow 100 acres of corn this year. And if you grow more than that, we're going to tax the shit out of you so that it won't be profitable at all. You'll end up losing money.
And what was the year that the Wickard versus Filburn came down?
Oh, my God, that was 1934, 35.
Okay.
Where they told the guy he couldn't grow his own wheat to feed his family.
What the hell business is of the government? Why are they involved in anything?
Well, because, Linda, as they argued in the Wicker case, that he was negatively impacting commerce.
Oh, I see. So they're bastardizing the Constitution, you know, ever since and before. I get it.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. The reasoning was that because Mr. Wicker was growing his own wheat, he wasn't going into the marketplace and purchasing that wheat feed his family. And because he wasn't purchasing that wheat on the open market, it had a negative impact on commerce. Just imagine if every American grew their own wheat, nobody would be buying bread. We can't have such a thing in the United States of America. It would kill our economy.
That's the logic, or the illogic.
Yes.
I got it. So am I the monster because I planted 6 rows of veggies in my backyard?
Well, you know, I can just about guarantee you with 100% certainty that is illegal in the state of California.
Too bad. You know what? I swear I'll die on that hill. I will stay away from my garden.
I know it's illegal in Georgia.
Oh, I'm sure it is here too. I don't care. I'm done. I'm not
sure.
Going to comply. I'm done. They can just found it.
It's illegal to grow wheat in your backyard anywhere?
No. This was during the Depression, and Roosevelt was trying to push through all these farm subsidy programs.
Yeah, another schmuck.
Right.
And they actually had it was a big farm bill, and I forget what the hell it was, the title of it.
Jeez.
But under the guise of that law, and see, the Supreme Court had shot down 2 other programs that Roosevelt had instituted. They shot them down as being unconstitutional. Well, Roosevelt was, of course, pissed. And so when the Wicker case came before the Supreme Court, Roosevelt made the claim that he would pack the Supreme Court with 13
mm-hmm.
justices in order to get a favorable decision. And so the court decided 5-4 that Wicker couldn't grow his own wheat. And that decision gave rise to the saying, a switch in time saves 9.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, FDR was the original cast on scene. We'll put it that way, rotter. Remember when in the 30s when Hitler burned all the books? I think it's time for a law burning ceremony. We need to get this crap and just start. Oh, I'm tired of it. Get them all out.
Oh, my God. If we burned all the law books in the United States, we would have global warming.
Absolutely.
I mean, you'd be releasing about 1 million years worth of old growth forest into heat energy. I mean, we'd have to blot out the sun for a couple of years.
I know, but wouldn't it be fun? I mean, gee, many gods. We need to take our country back, Ron. I don't know how we're going to do it.
Well, I've said before, and I firmly believe it, that left to their own devices, they will fail, and they will fail miserably.
Yes.
So my theory is let them fail.
I know.
I mean, it's going to happen.
I know. I think you're right about getting our communities together and preparing for it, because we have to know that it's coming, you know. And if you don't know how big and bad the tsunami is going to be, then you're not going to get it, and you're not going to be able to save yourself and your neighbors and, you know, your family. So, yeah.
I have a solution to the problem.
Oh, God. What's that, Robert?
We could always go to the island of Tonga and live there.
I see.
But the problem with that, Robert, is that Tonga would become like Syria.
Oh God!
Oh my gosh!
They would need United Nations intervention.
Oh gag!
I mean, honest to God, you look around the world, and this is if it's not patently obvious to anyone out there listening, you know, when you look at what went on in Syria and Libya and Egypt and around the world, this is the shift. This is the paradigm shift. The progressives, the socialists, the Marxists, they believe they have enough numbers now. They've altered they've altered society enough that they believe that they can now take over completely. That's why they are out in the open about it.
Yeah.
That's why it's just hanging out there. They have successfully indoctrinated a large enough portion of the population.
Population, yeah.
That they have re-engineered our society.
Well, it's scary, but all we can do is keep doing what we're doing, I suppose, and just keep educating ourselves and everybody we can get our hands on.
I think we have to not lose heart.
Right.
And we have to recognize that, you know, it's the old adage, give them enough rope, they'll hang themselves, and they will.
That's true. It will.
They will fail. It's going to fall apart.
Yep. Especially monetarily. It can't sustain. This can't be sustained
conditions. And when it does, you know, they're going to try and blame capitalism. And that's just not going
to happen. Oh, they're going to blame Bush.
Bush wasn't a capitalist, so, you know.
No, I know.
Neither is Bernanke. Neither is Greenspan. Neither was, you know, Volcker. And I don't think we've had a capitalist in office, oh, criminy, since Jefferson, maybe.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know.
Oh, Lord. I don't know.
It can be disheartening. I just keep hoping it's going to collapse, you know, soon.
Yeah.
The sooner the better.
Maybe that's the best thing for us, then. You know, Ron. What other alternative do we have? I mean, that's how companies bankrupt and they go into bankruptcy and they go back and build and become better. Maybe that's what it's going to take.
I believe that's true. I honestly do, and this is something that, you know. We didn't allow that to happen in the housing market, in the housing bubble.
Right.
And now,
right.
Now you're seeing people that went out and they bought houses when it looked like things were back on a little bit of an uptick, and now housing prices are falling again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why can't now that the economy is really, what would happen, Ron, if every working employee or employer or everyone has a business just can't afford to work anymore and can't afford to run their business anymore, what if everybody filed for bankruptcy? What would happen?
We're in that situation now, Robert. I mean, you've got companies out there that, you know, it's crazy to me, but I understand why they do it. You've got major corporations out there that borrow the money to fund their payroll.
It's crazy. Oh my, that's the worst you can do. That's nuts.
No, I just don't understand why they cannot admit if we're $15 million, $15 billion, $15.5 billion of debt that we owe to China.
Trillion.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Well, and we don't know it's China. See, That's the misnomer.
We owe
quite a bit to Japan, but we owe the bulk of it to ourselves.
Yep.
But what I'm trying to say is, if we're $15.5 trillion in debt, why can't we just admit that we're broke? I mean, we're not only that we're broke, that we're bankrupt. Why can't we just admit it and quit going over this stuff that we're going?
There's a real simple explanation why we can't admit that. Because if the government admits we're broke, it would be an admission that Keynesian economics and central economic planning is an abject failure. They're not willing to admit that.
Of course not.
The problem, the problem isn't with the policy. The problem isn't with the monetary system. The problem is that we, the folks that make up the economy, we're not spending enough and we're not earning enough. We're not working hard enough. We're not paying our fair share, Robert. You've not been paying attention, sir.
Yes, I know what the fair share deal is.
You are not paying your fair share, Robert, and that's why the system is failing. It has nothing to do with the system and everything to do with you being a tax cheat.
So, I'm a tax cheat, huh?
Okay. So, Ron, if they taxed all the billionaires and trillionaires at 100% of their profits or whatever, do you think they could run the government for 15 minutes?
I think that chart shows that they could run it for damn near a year. Almost a full year.
I thought it was down to 15 minutes. That was my bad.
If we could just, confiscate all the wealth in the United States of America, and by all, I mean all property, everything, we could almost pay to run the government for an entire year.
It's sick.
But we wouldn't quite make it out of debt.
Oh, no. Anyway, how much time do you have left?
Just a couple of minutes.
Well, thank you so much, you guys, and it's been great, and we've solved the problem, so tomorrow's a better day, except for the days of rage. Oy vey. Look for fireworks tomorrow. God bless everyone
on this site. I hope that rage are a smashing success. I hope that they create riots, pandemonium, and chaos.
Oh, wow.
Because that's what it's going to take.
I know. I agree. It's sad. But I'm staying home.
The sooner the damn thing falls apart, the sooner the wheels come off this wagon, the sooner the wagon stops descending towards the pit of hell.
I know.
As long as the wheels are on it, we're still rolling towards that cliff.
Okay, love, I'm going to let you guys go and wind it up, and God bless you for taking my call, and I'm praying for this family.
Thanks for calling in, Linda. We always enjoy it.
Thank you, Linda. Bye.
Robert, any parting words, sir?
Maybe our anointed one should have a telephone around the world since he wants to be president of the world. And it could be the Obama telephone, like Jerry Lewis, and just raise the money.
Well, I think Romney's going to be the president of the world, and that's just in keeping with his Mormon training to get him ready to be the god of his own planet when he passes away.
You're funny, Ron. I just hope the FBI or the IRS or whatever doesn't come after us, right?
Well, it's too late for me to hope that the IRS won't come after me.
We just gotta keep on talking so we can keep saying that's we just gotta be there for each other right now. That's all we got right now.
Let's cheer on the Occupy protesters tomorrow for their day of rage. God bless you.
Absolutely. Ron, you take care. Keep your chin up. Don't get discouraged. You're doing a great job.
Not a chance.
All right.
We'll talk to you later, sir.
We'll keep fighting.
Absolutely. God bless.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Mr. Bill Strong and Rod Luke was on with us for a while. Miss Yola, Miss Linda calling in, and Robert, and my pops, Tom Golden, Bill Strong, just everybody, I really appreciate the support coming out to the show. We've got a full lineup. I understand Brian and Michael are going to be gone this week and maybe longer, or perhaps just Michael. We'll have to figure out a show schedule this week, but stay tuned, guys. We've got great shows coming up Tomorrow night will be Bill at 7 o'clock with Patriot Chat. Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern will be Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. And where we go from there is anybody's guess, but God bless. Have a great night and keep fighting.